Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are once again joined by Dune Navigator Martin. How in the world are you, Martin?
Good. Thank you for having me back.
Of course. Thanks for staying overnight and coming back on this Tuesday episode for us.
No, he actually flew back to Ireland then come back here today.
Some Taylor Swift levels of CO2 emissions.
Thankfully, the time zones worked out perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. Before we dive into the minute, I realized that we did not ask our usual question yesterday, John, to a guest, or especially a first-time guest on the show. And
oh, fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. We were just so excited to get into it. We completely forgot our Southern hospitality. How did you get introduced to Dune? Like, how did you get into this world of Dune?
I was, I think, 13. And one of my high school classmates introduced me to the OG book. Mm-hmm. I have zero recollection about why he would have done that. Like, I'm sure both of us were kind of big sci-fi nerds. I'm definitely, like, I was telling John that if we ever run out of Dune content, we can just switch over to Deep Space Nine and take over the podcast and do a full episode of your favorite Deep Space Nine episode and my favorite piece. Like, so I'm sure there was something
John, get out of here. We got other shit to talk about.
All right, bye.
What is your favorite Deep Space Nine episode, by the way?
Oh, man. This doesn't just apply to Deep Space Nine, but I'm a sucker for the go back in time to the 20th century episodes.
Mm, yes.
The ones that happened on Voyager are great. Seeing those, I think it's like Time's Arrow or something is the name for those. But the one where they go back to the kind of what's happening now in Los Angeles, 24th century, 20, what century are we in?
We're in the 21st.
21st century, excuse me, sorry. I watch a lot of Star Trek, John. It all gets scrambled up in my head.
All right.
that one's really good. The name's escaping me, but it's where they get like the hostage situation in the employment office and they're in the sanctuary cities and stuff like that. But that's a really good one. I'm gonna say those are my favorite ones. What about you?
My absolute favorite Deep Space Nine episode is In the Pale Moonlight. Mm. You know, the one where Sisko is basically doing kind of captain's log recording. And it's almost like a monologue that he does. And we just cut away to the events. And that's where they assassinate the Romulan ambassador or whatnot. And, he recruits Garak to do something. And what he does is quite brutal, but it gets the Romulans into a war. And that whole episode and the kind of ethics and the moral ambiguity of it. And then Sisko finishing with kind of, I don't know what he says, but something along the lines of like, I can live with this. Yeah. Like, I'm okay with this. Like that's just, and especially in the middle of the episode, the meme worthy, it's a fake.
Yeah.
my absolute favorite one. But anything like in the later seasons where they really get into, like, they're comfortable with not just doing individual episodes, but like meta plots and like really deep moral things. Amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
So the guy, one of my classmates who introduced me to the original book, and I'll be like, I was 13, so, you know, formative years and whatnot. And I just fell in love with everything. Like, I felt that this book is so special in terms of complexity, in terms of the topics that it covers. And like, yes, ecology and planetology, but like what I kind of got hooked on is like the politics, the plans within plans.
Yeah.
Like, to this day, my favorite faction is the Bene Gesserit. Like, I love them. I realize they're kind of shady bunch and not always on the up and up, but I just love them. And then from there, just the rest of the books, I was like, oh, there's another one. Good. Let me read that. Yeah. And then I ended up with the cliffhanger of book six, and I was like, this is horrible. Where's the next book? Like, you can't leave me. Like, Frank, what's going on? And then I got introduced to the expanded universe, and I was like, oh, maybe we don't need anything after the cliffhanger. Maybe we're okay.
You know what? Maybe it's fine to just let it, you know, stay where it was.
I was just talking to another Dune nerd a couple of weeks back, and like, I actually don't mind the expanded universe as long as you know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. Like, if you expect, like me, like I was expecting Frank Herbert book 7.
Right.
Because that's how it was kind of advertised. You know, they took Frank's notes and whatnot, and they finished the story.
Frank's notes.
I know, right?
Air quotes.
All those notes. So as long as you know that you're not getting into that, but you're kind of getting into the Dune universe and you're getting kind of cinematic, kind of almost Pulp Fiction-like books,
yeah,
I think they're good. Like, if you know what you're getting into, they're okay. Like, I don't like them. They're okay.
They have merit,
but they're not,
for sure.
They're not Dune in the sense of depth and complexity, yeah, and just storytelling as well.
They just read like young adult novels, well, and I don't.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, you have space battles and explosions and robots.
I was going to say the same thing, but in a kind of a positive tone. Like, they are. Yeah, they're. I mean, they are kind of like young adult novels, and I admittedly have read very few of them. I think I got maybe one in. I was like, okay, I get it. I don't need it. It's not for me. It's fine. Whatever.
Well, we read Sisterhood.
Yeah,
going that's into the one that I've read. Oh, okay.
But I get it, you know, and I'm all for expanding a universe that I love. I think a lot of the like Star Wars expanded universe novels are great. There's a lot of stinkers in there too, but there's a lot of really good ones. So the idea, and just like, if you look at them as a vessel for more, of this world that we all love, I like them in that sense.
Yeah, and as you said before, like, any Dune is better than no Dune.
That's
like,
true.
Even shitty Dune is better than no Dune. So, yeah. I'm okay. Like, I did have a read-through kind of chronologically, like, in-universe chronologically,
mm-hmm,
just for shits and giggles. And there's obviously a difference in style and difference, sure, in storytelling, but I do have to say that when you're reading the expanded universe books, they're much more cinematic. They're much more, mm-hmm, kind of easy on the mind in terms of you really imagine the space battles and the explosions and the robots, yeah, and whatnot. So it's kind of very easily digestible. But that also means there's not much in terms of deep philosophical thought.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I really like it when an author is gives you either the reader, or if it's a movie, the viewer, the latitude to put these things together yourself. You know, they introduce a situation and you have to put in a little bit of work to understand, mm-hmm, and to make the story connect. And so one, that engages me in the story. Two, it also introduces people's opinions into things. People, you know, can read a situation differently than you, and that, you know, starts the discourse and just allows for conversation to happen. But if an author or a television or movie writer or whatever, if they just say, "Hey, here's exactly what I want you to think," it strips all of that that agency away, and there's no magic to it anymore.
Hold on to that thought, because I think that that's going to be very relevant to this actual minute.
I think so. What a good segue, Zach. cool. Well, let's get into it, shall we? We are here talking about minute 116 through 117, and we are graced with what Chani was going to say.
Yep.
First, and then we are graced with the meme of all memes. So, John, will you tell us what Chani said?
Yeah. So, like I said, at the end of yesterday's episode, Chani was kind of powering up to say something, and we have our translation on screen, a whopping 5 frames this time into the minute. Bring me a drop of water of life.
Okay.
Immediately afterwards, Stilgar goes, "As written."
That's where we get the hands up. No, that's not it.
Nope, that's not.
This scene, though, it's like zooming in on his face And he says, as written, that has been, I've seen that applied to a bunch of different funny scenarios online. And as soon as I saw it, I was Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. Hey, there it is.
And then going back to telling, not showing, we immediately get from Jessica, Desert Spring Tears.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I think most people would have been able to put that together.
I don't, because I don't think people would have, at this point in the movie, been mentally checked in enough to remember that Chani's original, or Chani's Sich name is Sihaya, which means desert spring, and she hates it. Mm-hmm. But Paul loved it at first. Now he hates it.
Yeah.
Because he's a teenager trying to get in her pants. So,
Do you think Jessica saying that helped at all? That, like, do you think people who didn't check in with that, like, who didn't retain that information, now suddenly realize that, oh yeah, his siege name is Desert Spring?
Yeah,
I don't think so. Like, in my mind, if you didn't retain that information, that piece of information, then you're like, oh, Jessica's saying shit. She's repeating the prophecy from what Stilgar just said.
Possibly.
I think it robs you some joy on a rewatch. If you didn't have this, like, if you say you didn't remember that, yeah, you could go forward without needing that information. But if you were to rewatch this movie and you say, you know, we get to that point where Chani says that, yeah, that's my name, then something clicks. You go, oh, that's what that meant. So again, it robs you a little bit of the joy of a rewatch.
Yeah.
But also, how did you read kind of Jessica's emotions? Because for me, it was like almost surprised. When she says Desert Spring Tears, like, it felt that she's surprised about it, which to me was weird, because you're the one who said, do it. She's so doing it.
So I think they've... Okay, let me put my Bene Gesserit robes on here for a moment. And
your Bene Gesserit Chinese takeout box hat?
My box hat, yeah. And, you know, think of this from her perspective. So Jessica knows that all these prophecies and everything that they're saying are basically bullshit. and that it is things that have been planted by the Bene Gesserit in their society. So she does not put a lot of, like, she believes them, honestly, like, she believes them, but it's not like a religious thing to her. It's like, it's work, you know, this is just work for her.
Another day in the office.
Yeah, pretty much. So whenever she, and this may be one of the few times where she actually gets to have that moment of revelation, like Stilgar has been, you know, flipping out for the past, you know, hour and a half over here. And I'm talking
about Stilgar's been flipping out since Paul killed Jamis. Yeah. Let's be real.
But, you know, she's
sorry, Jamis.
Yeah, Jamis. Thank you. She gets to have that moment of, oh, that, just like the prophecy, it is, this is Chani's name. And cool. She's like, yeah, she gets to feel that for a fleeting second.
Is it Jessica feeling that, or is it Alia?
God, well, who knows?
Even if it's Alia, like, at this point, there's not much that, like, in terms of what Alia knows, she doesn't know anything other than what Jessica knows. So even if it's Alia, it's kind of the same. Like, I had that thought as well. Like, maybe it's not Jessica who's surprised. Maybe Alia came to the surface and she's surprised, but she was born with Jessica's knowledge. Yeah. Well, she was, sorry, not born. She's not born. She was conceived with Jessica. No, not even conceived. You know what I mean. She has Jessica's knowledge.
She's pre-born with Jessica's
knowledge. Yeah, exactly. So she knows everything that her mom knows at this point. I don't know. It just felt weird to me, because I get what you're saying about her not being, like, I don't think even movie Jessica is 100% certain that, or at least she shouldn't be 100% certain that Paul will survive this. Like, we know, like, she obviously thinks he's the Kwisatz Haderach, but there's no proof or there's no evidence. Like, she might believe in that, so I get that angle of, she believes, if not in the prophecies planted by the Missionaria Protectiva, but then at least she believes in the bit of, oh, my son is the genetic result of 90 generations of experimentation. And so he should survive this. Yeah. But I don't, like, and so I can understand that. It's just weird that she doesn't say anything else. She says Desert Spring Tears, which we know is from, well, we assume it's from the Panoplia Propheticus. So yeah. For her, that's an office. Like,
yeah,
you know, as if she's saying, oh, GDP. Why?
Yeah. Well, do you think she's maybe like a, she's a surrogate for the audience at this point? Like, that's what we're supposed to feel?
Yeah, I absolutely. Guess. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that's not unlike
Stilgar's a surrogate for the nerds in the audience at this point, then.
Must be. Yeah. So after she says this, Maker Keeper, which we never get an official name for this. So the Maker Keeper walks up holding a bottle of Pepsi Blue as the people look on in amazement.
Jesus.
I'm sorry, but what did Chani ask for?
A drop. Yeah.
A drop. A fucking drop. The service in this place.
Here's half a gallon.
they got so much water life. They're giving it away out here. Chani is still just like, she's in some kind of like fugue state right now.
Yeah, she's in her weird like just had the voice used on me trance.
Yeah, which
yeah, I think she's still in the. She's still doing it.
This is it. Yep, this is it. And the Maker Keeper kneels down beside her, and Chani then starts to move on her own again. She kind of wipes some tears off of her cheek and just like
taps her finger on the water of life.
Yeah, yeah. She takes her finger and just takes a little drop of the Jones Blueberry Bubblegum Soda and places it to her lips.
To Paul's lips.
Sorry, excuse me. To Paul's lips and inside of his mouth. And she really kind of works it up into the gums.
Meanwhile, you can see the dirt under her fingernails. And I'm just like, gross.
When she stands back up, her eyes are like have never left Paul's. She's just staring him down hardcore. And we get the extremest of extreme close-ups on Paul. On Paul. And we hear that raspy voice from earlier.
For the last time.
For the last time in the movie?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see ya.
See ya, whoever the fuck you are. Who knows?
Thank God, to be honest. What does the voice say before I completely bash it?
Kwisatz Haderach, climb up, arise. Mm-hmm. And then Paul's eyes open and we get a big Inception, blah, kind of thing. And Stilgar falls to his knees.
Before we move on from that.
Yeah.
What, Martin, I feel like you have some opinions on the raspy voice.
Oh, I would have come back to that. Don't worry. Yeah, because and it connects to what you said about, you know, inferring things and being implicit versus explicit. Like, do we really need to be hit over the head with this? Like, do we as the audience, like, we get it. We get what's happening. There's been a bunch of discussions just happened. Like, mm-hmm. We know what's going to happen. He's going to either die or not. He's going to rise up. He's going to climb. He's going to, you know, he's going to go Super Saiyan. Why do we really need this raspy ass voice in the back? Like, I feel like I'm being disrespected as a, even without the book knowledge, like I would have, you know, put two and two together.
I think it's because this raspy ass voice has been with us since the start. And this is not the first time that it has told Paul to climb up and arise.
Okay. Counter argument. It's creepy as fuck.
No, I agree. I agree with you on that. Like, I think it's supposed to be creepy, but I think, you know, it's just been the consistent, you know, Paul's subconscious and or latent, you know, ancestral histories are talking to him, and this is the last time that we hear it in this movie.
Yep. I'm very much fine with it. But again, like, Stilgar said that he's going to, you know, come back from the dead. Like, we already had that discussion a minute ago. Like, we don't need... I felt like we don't need it again. But to redeem itself, like, the music when Paul wakes up... Mm-hmm. Fucking sells it for me. Jesus, like, every time I rewatched it. And I did, like, you know, as you do, 5 seconds back, like, shivers. It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, really, Hans Zimmer and his team deserve all the awards. Like, fucking A.
There is one part in next week's minutes that I am very much looking forward to talking about in terms of the music. But yeah, they absolutely killed it. And I would love to, you know, ask more questions if we ever get the chance to, you know, talk to more of the music folks.
Yeah, that would be great. So at this crescendo of the music, I mean, it hits this high point and Paul just jerks awake. You know, he's up. He's here. He's back.
Mm-hmm.
And he stares at Chani and she is dumbfounded by this. Was not expecting that.
Well, it's almost like a look of relief on her face, rightly so, because guess what? He's not dead.
But also, I think at this point, she's already out of the voice trance.
Because yeah. So she's back. Because she has done it.
Indeed. The it has been done.
Yeah. Stilgar falls to his knees. The rest of the pilgrims and the Maker Keeper immediately all bow on the ground, you know, all inward facing towards Paul. And we get Chani's immediate normal reaction of Usul, I'm here.
Well, one little flash before she says that is the Maker Keeper setting down her bottle of Mountain Dew Blue Shock. and I had to get three in. This last time we're going to see it.
I was going to say, how many did you look up? How long is your list of blue sodas and or other drinks?
I'm running out, okay. But I still got a few more.
Okay.
I love the commitment. One note on this, when kind of Stilgar falls on his knees and then right after all the pilgrims or prayer people also do the same. Like, Paul opened his eyes. How many people saw that? Like, why is everyone on their knees? Like, or are they just imitating Stilgar? Like, Stilgar's on the knee. Quickly, Stilgar's on his knees.
Yeah, I think they see Stilgar, you know, collapse, and then they're just like, oh, fuck, something's happening.
Yeah, that's how I read it as well.
Or, you know, with the whole, you know, Chani is also visibly recognizing that he's awake, and, you know, they could have noticed that his eyes have opened. I mean, there's a whole, you know, suite of things that could have happened in this room. It's not a very large room, so...
No, but still, he's lying down. But anywho, yeah. To compliment Javier Bardem, because I know, yes, he's becoming an archetype, and I feel like, you know, all the Lisan Al-Gaib memes, you know, rightfully make him a meme. But in this scene, the shock on his face when he sees Paul wake up, like, to me, it reminded me of the Shutout Mapes from, not even the movie, but from the original book. When you know, Jessica says it's a maker, you know, the Chris knife, she doesn't recognize it, but she says maker, and then the Shutout Mapes kind of shrieks and says, "My lady, when one has lived with prophecy for so long, the moment of revelation is a shock." And like Stilgar's or like Javier Bardem's face perfectly represented that. Like, I love that so much. Like, we can meme him out, but this single frame of him like shocked again, he was a true believer, but now revelation has happened.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yeah, he's a hell of a good job acting in this scene.
Hell of a good job acting in this movie, let's be real.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Paul looks like he's going through it right now.
Paul is absolutely going through it. In my notes, I said that he almost looks like he's like still kind of paralyzed as his body's like coming back, because like he just kind of has like a completely blank stare on his face. He's like sweating like crazy.
Yeah, sweating. Yeah.
Chani's like kind of helping like to pull him up, and his face, like, it's not moving at all. He's just kind of like mouth slightly agape and everything. And then we cut to Jessica throughout all this, who now has a holy fuck, holy shit, holy fuck, holy shit, holy fuck, holy shit, holy fuck, holy shit kind of look on her face.
What do I do?
Yeah. Oh, God. What do I do? My son's a zombie.
No, I feel like she would have needed a cigar.
Yeah.
Light up a cigar and just say, I love it when a plan comes together.
Alia Insider is just going fucking nuts, fist pumping the air super hard. Which, you know, I know the timing doesn't line up for the book and everything, but I I just wish that there was a 3-year-old in the corner just tweaking out, just like absolutely going nuts in this scene.
Well, I want to say that this face that Jessica puts on right now, it's pretty much how her face is going to be the rest of the week.
Yep.
She's not really going to show much more emotion than this, which is just utter shock.
Our Lady of Perpetual Anxiety, Lady Stressica.
So Chani leans down. She embraces Paul. And everyone else kneels down. If they weren't already kneeling before, they are definitely kneeling down. And
with the exception of one person, Gurney Halleck, who looks confused as fuck.
Also, he has bad knees, like really bad knees from all the, you know, spice harvesting.
He's also ugly as fuck.
I noticed, yes. A lump of a man, I would say.
Yeah. He's the rolling, ugliest man.
A rolling ugly man. Yeah, Gurney is like, I'm happy y'all are happy, but I don't know what the fuck's going on. He's like, also, I never actually learned that language, so I don't know what's going on. I can't translate. We don't ever see Gurney speak Chukotsky. No. Okay.
Canonically, by the way, canonically, the Atreides battle language is Chukotsky, or based on Chukotsky. So Gurney should pick up some things.
Yeah.
That's also, I think, a retcon. Like, there was Atreides' battle language in the original Dune, and I think by the time of Children, Frank drops the bomb of, like, oh, the Atreides' battle language, comma, Jacobsa. I'm like, what do you mean?
Jacobsa is, at least according to the encyclopedia, not the actual language that the Fremen speak. The Fremen speak Fremen.
Oh, no, they
Fremen.
Don't. Yes,
Chukotsky is like shorthand for like various battle languages
and religious stuff. But yeah, the Fremen have their own, and not to plug my own shit, but I
by all means, please plug your own shit.
I have an article on kind of languages of Dune, and like when researching it, I struggled very much, and I think we had a kind of blue sky conversation about that as well. Fremen language is its own separate thing. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, Frank Herbert didn't make it easy, because even in the appendix, the terminology of the Imperium, there's a bunch of words that you would assume are either Chukotsky or Fremen, but then there's a note saying, oh, this is a Chukotsky word. And like, why would that be a or this is a Fremen word. And like, why wouldn't that be a Chukotsky? So, yes, it's a hunting, secret, also religious language of the Fremen. But I think in the movies, they just refer to the Fremen language as Chukotsky.
Yeah, it's just a blanket. Yeah, they speak Chukotsky in the movies.
Yes, that's it.
Which is fine. I mean, it's not really going to affect too much, except for the hardcore nerds to be like, hey, wait a second. and I believe do we get the line here at the very end of this minute? Okay, so.
We get a cliffhanger, I think.
Yeah, and it's Chani says, are you okay? And that is right where our minute cuts off.
Yep.
Is he okay? Do we know?
Oof.
We don't know. I haven't watched ahead of this yet, so I don't know.
Shut the fuck up.
That is all of my notes for this. I don't have there are a bunch of things we can, like, you know, compare the book towards, and I think we're doing a good job just like sprinkling that in as we go. The scene in the book is a lot less fanfare than we're getting in the movie. It's a big important scene. It's not just a kind of a throwaway thing, but we don't get all these people praying beside him. We don't get all, you know, Gurney looking confused in the back. It's very intimate. It's kind of a very private thing that's happening right now. So, I don't think there's a lot we can compare for what we saw on screen right now.
No, but I think it does a good job of, you know, still portraying everything in this movie and, you know, showing that this is the religious, one of the religious moments that, like, really matter to the Fremen.
Yeah.
The next one is next week.
Yep.
So
I have two notes if you'll indulge me.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the topics is Paul's, let's call it, resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? What actually resurrected him? And I'm not like, let's not talk about book, because I think the book does a good job of not explaining it. Like, you have to piece together what the plan was, but I think it's there and it's really clever. But in the movie, I get that the prophecy was Chani cries a bit and then something happens, apparently what we saw, but in terms of in-universe science, was it salty tears that saved this young man?
I think he was sodium deficient, yeah. Yeah.
So you're saying he forgot to maintain his still suit and got the salts back?
I think that's the most likely explanation.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. That does make sense. Because in my mind, why would a drop, even from someone so important as Chani, a teardrop help the situation? A teardrop mixed with water of life.
So more of the poison that he already took.
Exactly.
But also, how does that slightly help? Slightly diluted from a tear. Yeah.
You know,
so how does that help?
If I'm going to headcanon my way out of this, then...
Please.
So what Paul's been doing for the unspecified amount of time that he's been laying there, he's been doing that whole transmuting the poison thing that Jessica did earlier. And he was missing one piece and he was rummaging around. He just needed a little bit of salt. He just needed a little bit of sodium. And that was the last little thing that he needed to be able to transmute the poison. And as soon as he got it, he was like, cool, we're here, we're back, baby.
A little bit of sodium, a little bit of Chinese genetic material, call it a day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's where I'm going to land on it.
Can we talk about what the book did? Because I really love it, because it's very clever. Because, and again, coming back to what you said at the very beginning of the episode, after all the amazing Deep Space Nine stuff, is that the book has a lot of implicit stuff that it's not spelled out for you. Like, if you connect the dots and you put two and two together, it's there. But if you don't, then even the book scene is just Chani comes up, adds a bit of poison that's already there, and then Paul wakes up, which is weird. But what she does is, and we talked about this yesterday, Jessica doesn't know what's happening. Like, with all her prana bindu, she knows her son's alive, but she doesn't know what happened. No one in the siege knows what happened, which to me is, again, a plot hole, because in the book, we don't see him take the water of life, but I think it's implied that he either drowned the worm or got to the stash of water of life. Mm-hmm. Either way, there should be kind of some evidence that you could piece two and two together with a little bit of investigative work that what he did, but no one in the siege knows what's happening. Paul's just on the ground, seemingly dead. Jessica calls in reinforcements. Chani comes in. And again, the sci-fi miniseries does such a good job replicating the scene. Mm-hmm. Once she understands what's going on, she goes close to Paul. In the miniseries, she gives him a kiss and she smells water and life on him. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense that she knows what water of life smells because she's a Sayadina. She handles this toxic stuff. So she would know what this is. Weird that Jessica wouldn't have figured it out. But
right,
whatever. And after
she probably
that,
didn't lean down to kiss her son. So
maybe. Okay. She did just some prana bindu voodoo magic. But anywho. And after that, Chani goes, yes, bring me some water of life. She takes a droplet on her finger and brings it close to Paul's mouth, nose, face area. And as soon as she gets there, he visibly reacts to the smell of the additional poison. And so that's when she's like certain, 100%, this motherfucker is an idiot. He took the poison. Now what we need to do is bring me unturned water of life, because they do have stashes of turned water of life, because even if a reverend mother is out of commission or not available, they do still want to have their post-battle orgies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so they have a
that's just
big-ass stash of turned water of life, but they have a limited amount of unturned one. So she calls and she says, bring me water of life. And I think she drops one droplet, an additional droplet, to Paul's mouth, and then he wakes up. Mm-hmm. But what you kind of get in terms of what her plan was, she wanted Jessica, and I think she says it as well, she wanted Jessica to turn that water of life.
Yep.
She wanted then to kind of administer the water of life that is in the process of being turned, so that Paul drinks the in-between water of life, and whatever poison he still has in his body would turn. So it's not him transmuting the poison, but his mom starts the chain reaction in the water of life, and then they splash a bit on him, and the process finishes in him, which is a genius idea.
Plan. Yeah,
it's a great plan, and it kind of makes sense because we know that Reverend Mothers can do this all day long. And even in the scene, it's so funny that Jessica just starts gulping it and starts transmuting it, like, because she's been doing this every day. Like, that's her day job now. Yeah. So that is the original plan. And it makes sense that they want to do this. And then Paul wakes up and says, the fuck's going on?
He's like, I actually don't need that. And she's like, she's got half of it down already. She's like, exactly. What?
She's got a beer bong up with water of life.
And Paul's like, what the fuck is going on? It's been a second ago, I took a droplet of Water of Life. So remember, like, a week ago when Paul started chugging the thing? Book Paul had a single droplet, and it knocked him out for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's potent stuff.
So that I think, is a really good plan. The other note I had is maybe a little bit nitpicky, but as written, where?
In the books.
It could be on the walls of the siege.
That's true. There's a lot of writing on the walls.
We do see a shitload of writing on the walls of the siege. So,
because the reason
we know from Art and Soul that those writings on the walls are religious texts and prophetic texts that are, you know, part of the Missionaria Productiva.
Okay, good. I completely missed on that. Okay, then I have nothing to nitpick about, because I wanted to bring in, like, canonically accurate Fremen texts. Yeah. That could not possibly contain anything from the Panoplia Propheticus. So it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. It's cool. It's right there on the wall, man.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. Yeah.
What? Don't you know how to read?
Well, okay. Given what we've talked about this week, would it have been out of character if when Stilgar said "as written," if he pointed back at the wall? I said, right here.
Well, there's no writing on the wall of the Maker Temple. Okay. We have writing on the wall of Siege Tabor, so.
No, it wouldn't have been. I feel like that would have elevated the character. Right here.
All right, cool. Well, let's get back tomorrow, and we will really just figure out, is Paul okay?
I hope he is.
Maybe.
It's going to be a weird ending of the movie if he's not. So.
He just collapses.
And then
that's it.
Credits roll. Yep.
But then 40 minutes of group worm grinding.
That's true. Yep. I wouldn't be mad at that.
No. Well, I believe that's going to do it for us for today's episode. In the meantime, you can find us online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back tomorrow with another Is Paul Okay moment.
Yep.
Featuring Dune Navigator Martin. We'll see you then.
See ya.
Bye.